The last case on the court's oral calendar this morning is in the matter of amendments to various water appropriation permits. There are numerous parties in this case and several attorneys. Before we begin, let me make sure I correctly understand who will be arguing for the municipal parties and the division of time. The court expanded the time for oral argument in this case and allowed the municipal parties 30 minutes for their argument. And as I understand it, Mr. Monty Mills will have 11 minutes to make argument regarding the residential irrigation ban. Jim Thompson will have 11 minutes to make arguments regarding the per capita residential water use reduction. Squires will have 3 minutes to argue regarding the surface water conversion condition, and then Mr. Mills will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Is that a correct statement of how the parties have agreed to allot the time?
It is, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. And are you Mr. Mills?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why don't you approach the podium and begin your argument? Each lawyer should be sure to state his or her name for the record immediately preceding any argument provided. We do make an oral recording of the hearing, which is available for the public. We want to make sure everyone is identified. You may proceed.
Good morning. Monty Mills on behalf of the City of White Bear Lake and also speaking for the other municipal respondents. Before providing an overview of the 3 points I have for you today, I want to provide some important context for this case. After the Ramsey County District Court's decision in 2017, the DNR released a new transient water model. The DNR says that their new model is the best available science to inform decisions about water management. The DNR also says that the best available science shows that a residential irrigation ban would be unlikely to have a meaningful positive effect on the elevation of White Bear Lake. So, whenever you hear someone talking about the Ramsey County District Court's 2017 order, please keep in mind that the best science was not available to the district court 8 years ago.
So have the parties gone back to the district court to attempt to have that injunction modified?
The parties have been before the district court, yes, Your Honor. So the point here is that the administrative law judge, whose decision this court is reviewing today, did have access to the best science. And so although I'm in the appellant's chair, we're respondents for purposes of this, and the city's request that this court affirm the ALJ's decision that the residential irrigation ban is not reasonably necessary for the safety and welfare of the people of Minnesota.
We have a procedural posture here in which the district court issued the injunction, which includes the residential irrigation ban. That decision was appealed. We reversed, Supreme Court reversed us and remanded. Then we affirmed the district court's order. So as I understand it, this court has affirmed the district court's injunction, including the residential irrigation ban. Under what theory can the administrative law judge, who is holding contested hearings regarding the impact of the ban on each of the municipalities and whether or not compliance is feasible, by what authority does the administrative law judge essentially reverse the district court's residential irrigation ban, which this court has already affirmed? It's an odd procedural posture, yes?
It is unusual. I agree, Your Honor, but the ALJ's decision is not relitigating that issue. This court's 2020 opinion also included an important point, and that is that there's a statutory right to a contested case hearing before the permits could be amended. And that's what the parties have been doing, is engaging in the contested process. This court's 2020 opinion reviewed a 2017 district court decision. You're correct. There, the district court did not discuss the reasonably necessary standard that Minnesota Statute Section 103G.315, Subdivision 6, applies. And that's the authority, to answer your question, for reviewing these permit amendments, and the ALJ then determined that this irrigation condition was not reasonably necessary under that statute. And this court in 2020 had said there's a statutory right to that contested case hearing before those permit amendments could be.
But what I'm trying to do is reconcile the fact that accepting your argument, there was a statutory right to a contested hearing.
Yes.
That would sound like, okay, we're going to start over. We're going to go to the ALJ, and the ALJ is going to determine whether or not any of these things in the injunction should be made part of a permit. And if that's what this court intended, why would this court have gone through the analysis and provided the explanation as to why other parts of the injunction were appropriate and affirm those? Because the way you're explaining the process, and I think I understand what you're saying, then why would we have said anything other than there's a right to a contested hearing, reverse the district court, go have contested hearings? But that's not what we said. We affirmed the district court, and we said go have contested hearings as to each municipality regarding the feasibility of compliance with the injunction, because that would satisfy the need for a statutory hearing and provide a vehicle for each municipality to avoid having to comply if it were not feasible to do so.
Yeah, that, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with that interpretation. Feasibility isn't part of the statute here. Feasibility isn't in 103G.315. And Chief Judge Siegel, in crafting the opinion, I don't have visibility into the inner workings there, but clearly recognized that there's a statutory right to a contested case hearing. And that statutory right involves a determination of whether a permit condition, such as a residential irrigation ban, is reasonably necessary. So that's a statutory right. And for that to have meaning, you have to hear the evidence. It would be illusory if you go back and you're not allowed to.
Counsel, I think my colleague has a question for you.
Judge Bentley.
What do you make then of the statement in our decision that the issue about the 5-mile boundary was not to be relitigated? If you were right that we kind of start over and we can look at, the court could kind of revisit the entire ban, why couldn't the ALJ or the agency, why couldn't they revisit the 5-mile ban? In fact, the ALJ seemed to have issues with that.
Judge Bentley, you are correct. It is true the court did warn that the parties were not to relitigate the issue of negative impact, and that had been determined prior. And here in the contested case hearing, the cities did not relitigate that issue of negative impact. The focus of this issue with the irrigation ban was the DNR's own best science, which had evolved since the district court decision, which didn't have access to the best science. And the DNR's own science was saying that the irrigation ban would not have a meaningful positive benefit to the lake surface water. And so litigating the absence of a benefit is not relitigating the issue of negative impact on surface water by the groundwater appropriations. Rather, the cities, using the DNR's own best science, were pointing out that the irrigation ban would not have a meaningful positive effect on the lake.
So let me take you in another way to think about this then, because I take your argument about law of the case. This is a different case. The municipalities weren't all present in the district court litigation. So I can see where there's some issue there about saying that the parties here are somehow bound by that decision or to the injunction or to that degree. But when you're looking at the language between the two, I mean, the ALJ here was tasked with determining whether the ban was reasonably necessary for the safety and welfare of the people of the state, right, which is a big argument you make. Why isn't the existence of an injunction that the DNR is required, obligated to follow, and the injunction was entered under the determination that it was necessary or appropriate to protect the air, water, land, or other natural resources? So why wouldn't it be reasonably necessary then for the safety and welfare of the people for the agency to then apply that injunction? So in that sense, I wonder, is that why isn't that a way to connect the injunction when we're looking at those reasonable determinations? It seems like an agency that's doing something in response to an injunction that says it's necessary to protect air, water, and natural resources from pollution, it would also be reasonably necessary for safety and welfare of people.
I think I go back to the statute, and Chief Judge Siegel indicated you can't amend a permit without going through a contested case process under the statute. And 103G.315 requires that the commissioner make a determination that it's reasonably necessary. And when the commissioner's own best science says a residential irrigation ban is not going to have a positive effect on the lake, it's entirely appropriate to then conclude that where the statute says you can't amend a permit without a finding that it's reasonably necessary under the statute. If the DNR's own best science says this doesn't make sense, then that's the authority by which the ALJ made his conclusions and findings, and that's the tension with the prior proceeding. Which was not based on the best science available.
Counselor Mills, if I'm...
I was going to say Judge Jessen has been waiting patiently to ask you a question.
So, Mr. Mills, if we disagree with you and believe that the reasonable necessity decision was made by the district court and, you know, you have to take any new science back to the district court, okay, so just assume that, then is there anything left for us to remand to the ALJ? I mean, you just said that feasibility is not part of the statutory process. So I just want to get your best thinking on that.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know why Chief Judge Siegel would remand for a contested case if it were that.
That's
sort of the, I think, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. If you could just do your best to answer my question.
Sure. There's a statutory right to a contested case hearing. And I think for the statutory right to have meaning and not be illusory, you have to provide evidence.
So,
and
my question was, if reasonable necessity is already decided, if we went down that road and said that what the ALJ did was relitigate that, is there anything left to be decided in the contested case proceeding? Is there a feasibility issue, as the court talked about with the other, with the other conditions?
So I think it would be, respectfully, there's nowhere in the district court's opinion that talks about reasonable necessity. The district court never even cited 103G.315, so it's difficult to...
Yet we didn't reverse the district court, right?
Sure, but remanded under that statute for a contested case. And so there has to be a determination that... a permit condition is reasonably necessary under the statute for it to happen. And that was not litigated in the district court. The 2020 decision even noted that this court observed that the association stated repeatedly in district court and on appeal that the relief sought does not involve the municipalities and their lawsuit was not to review or change a particular permit. So that means, although this court may read that decision differently, that decision remanded for a contested case, and it clearly was stating that the prior decision was not to change a particular permit. So there's this statutory right to have a contested case before you can impose a condition on a permit.
Okay. So you're saying, I just want to make sure I understand your argument, even though this court affirmed the injunction, which I think we have to agree is this court saying the injunction's okay, and we remanded for contested hearings to satisfy the statutory requirement, the plan was that on remand, each municipality would get to litigate whether or not the injunction was reasonable and necessary, even though we'd already affirmed it.
Let me, if I may, point the court to more language in its 2020 opinion. Chief Judge Siegel's opinion indicated and anticipated the possibility of conflicting outcomes between the relief ordered by the district court
and
the decisions in the contested case.
This is not to say, however, that the permit holders have the right to relitigate whether the groundwater appropriations within a 5-mile radius of the lake will have a negative impact. So you're saying that goes only to negative impact. It does, but the issue of what's reasonably necessary was wide open.
Yes, and as I... when I had the exchange with Judge Bentley, the cities didn't relitigate the negative impact. The cities pointed to the DNR's own best evidence that an irrigation ban would not have a meaningful positive effect on the lake. I also want to point
out... I'm going to stop you because you're well over your time and just see if either of my colleagues has an additional question before you finish.
If I could just ask, Mr. Mills, I think there's some time set aside for rebuttal, so if you could give some more thought to my, if we disagree, is there an affirmative defense on feasibility or something like that that we you think we should consider when facing the issue of remand?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. May it please the court, my name is Jim Thompson. I'm attorney of record for Lake Elmo and Oakdale, but for the purpose of this argument, I'm appearing on behalf of Lake Elmo, Hugo, Lionel Lakes, and Vadnais Heights. I am going to digress from my prepared remarks to see if I can address some of the questions the court's asked. I disagree somewhat that all the Judge Siegel's decision did was affirm. I don't believe that's quite right. It affirmed and it remanded. Mm-hmm. And it said in that order, quote, depending on the evidence adduced at the contested case hearings, modifications to the injunction, it's not there, may be appropriate.
Could you point us to the page from which you're reading, please?
That's page 9, Your Honor, of the Westlaw site. It's right before the heading C, District Court Authority to Order Terms Requiring Expenditure of Public Funds. It's the sentence or the phrase right above that.
Thank you.
So, to see if I can get at Judge Jessen's questions. So we had a contested case hearing. This court ordered, there's a different standard for what the AOJ reviewed in the contested case hearings than the mirror standard that the district court judge set. So let's assume for purposes of discussion, we finished these hearings, the AOJ ruled that what he did, and there was no appeal. We would be back, and the associations have already been back in front of the district court judge, asking for her to change her injunction, essentially.
Based on the new evidence?
Based on the ALJ's findings.
Which are based on the new evidence?
Oh, correct. Yes, Your Honor. But what the district court judge has stayed any decision on that pending the outcome of this appeal. So if hypothetically, if in this appeal, the court affirms the ALJ's finding on the ALJ on the residential irrigation ban and reverses on the 75-90 condition, and that becomes the final decision, now it is back before the district court judge for her to determine whether she should modify her injunction based on what the final results are on the contested case hearing. With respect to the standard for the contested case hearing, it is...
You know, I'm reading that language you cited us to. It is helpful. Another thing that was said, because I'm just trying to understand what this court expected these contested hearings to do, And one of the things you said at the end of the section you've cited us to is, we nevertheless cautioned the district court that heed must be taken of the permit holder's statutory right to a hearing as it administers the injunction, and that depending on the evidence adduced at the contested case hearings, modifications may be appropriate. Doesn't that language suggest that this court affirmed the injunction and the purpose of the remand and the hearing was to allow the municipalities to present evidence regarding administration of the injunction that we had affirmed?
And I respectfully disagree. I think let's assume the district court judge had included that language in her order, that there was no appeal. Let's assume she said, here are the conditions I'm ordering to impose, subject to a contested case hearing by the municipalities. They have that right. It is a different standard in the contested case hearings. Once that's over, come back to me, and I'll decide then whether there's any modifications. What's before this court is what should the final decision be of the ALJ. The municipality's position is that the final decision should be that the residential irrigation ban is valid and the 7590 condition is invalid. And this court has the authority to make that decision on the appeal from the ALJ's decision. What the district court does with that later is a different issue, but I don't think it's a jurisdictional issue, Your Honor. If I could, I'd briefly like to go into the 7590 condition. The ALJ's decision on that needs to be reversed for several reasons. Primarily, the ALJ failed to take into account the individual circumstances of each city in making his determination that the 7590 gallon per day condition was feasible. I know the court has the opinion in front of it, and we're here because the court ordered the hearing, and now we're back. The court said one of the reasons for the hearing, the court specifically pointed to the 7590 condition. The court said that there's evidence in the record that establishes that can be a wide variation between municipalities in the ability to achieve those numbers. The example the court used was, for example, the size of the city and the mix of residential and industrial uses. Depending on those factors, it may be that a particular municipality, for example, a small city with a high percentage of industrial uses, would be impossible to meet that standard. The court's decision rationale mimics the exact language almost from the DNR's decision in 2018 to amend the permit, where it questioned the ability of all cities to meet that standard. What happened here, Your Honor, is the ALJ used a meat axe when he should have used a scalpel. He didn't consider any of the specific particularities of each city. Findings 171 to 185 constitute the entire basis for his decision on the 7590.
So I guess my question on this is, I think, similar to the discussion that we were having with Mr. Mills about whether the district court, the ALJ here, erred in the same way, I guess, in both, with respect to both conditions, that it was kind of re-litigating the first issue about whether this condition was reasonably necessary for the safety and welfare. And here the ALJ said yes. With respect to the irrigation ban, it said no, but that in both cases it didn't consider the individual circumstances of the municipalities as more of a either whether we call it an affirmative defense or, saying even if we take the big picture that, yes, the DNR was within its, overarching authority to impose a condition like this, the question is whether each municipality had a chance to dispute it. So I'm wondering why that's not a way to think about it, as opposed to what you said, which is kind of taking the axe, the sledgehammer, whatever, to all of them at the same time. I mean, why is that wrong, or is it?
I believe it's wrong for two reasons, Your Honor. One, in his findings, specifically finding 185, the AOJ relied only on subdivision 6, paragraph B in the statute, which says, uses the word reasonably necessary. He completely ignored subdivision 6A that states, in particular, the applicant, in this case the DNR, has the burden of proving that the condition is reasonable, practical, and adequately protect the public safety. He never made a finding on 6A.
Well, but the DNR under the statute isn't an applicant.
Well, Your Honor, opposition, I respectfully disagree on that. Our position is that they applied, they made an application to amend the permit. It's clear, I think.
Because the court ordered an injunction requiring them to do so. It's not as if they did so of their its own volition.
No, we don't disagree with you, Your Honor, but the city certainly weren't the applicant. So, we weren't asking for our water appropriations permits to be amended.
Judge Jessen.
Counsel. Go ahead. If we agree with you and think, no, the ALJ really should have done a city, municipality by municipality, looked at it, all these issues municipality by municipality, and we remanded, what would that look like? Do you believe would we be asking the ALJ just to make a different set of findings and conclusions based upon evidence that's already in the record? Or are you asking us to allow him to reopen the record? Help me with the specifics.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the 7590 condition is the specific one that this court looked at to say this is, it could be different. It didn't talk about the irrigation ban. It's possible that some conditions there aren't anything different between the municipalities. Ability to convert to surface water, that's probably unique to different cities. The irrigation ban places the same burden on all cities, but it's possible that it could not be different. The judges say it doesn't matter, everybody's the same. But that's not true with the 70. With respect to the remedy, when a district court or any kind of issues inadequate findings that don't support the conclusion, I would contend that reversal and avoiding the condition is the appropriate remedy, because the findings don't support the conclusion, and it is a matter of law, which is what the contested case hearing is
so
about.
So from your perspective, it's not remanding, it's just reversal.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. Our position is that the decision of the AOJ with respect to the 7590 should be reversed, and that condition should no longer be apply to the city's water appropriations permit.
I have one additional question, if I may, because our opinion referred to, you know, evidence that the municipalities might say that, you know, their water use didn't really impact White Bear Lake. Did any of the cities in the proceeding below submit evidence that their water use did not impact White Bear Lake?
You know, particularly Lionel Lakes and Hugo indicated, and we all argued the same thing, that the 7590 condition had no measurable effect. In fact, White Bear Lake's expert, Mr. Bauer, said any difference would not be perceivable by a normal human being. And one, I see I'm out of time, but just one point I would like to make is an example of why the AOJ did not consider each city. He didn't even mention Vadnais Heights in his ruling.
I'm going to ask you, and I think I'm going to ask every municipality to address this, because I'm still struggling to understand the municipality's interpretation of our opinion. In the conclusion of our 2020 opinion, we said, for the above reasons, we affirm the district court on the remanded issues, but in doing so, we are cognizant of the breadth of the relief granted and the significant impacts that it will have on both parties and non-parties. And as I read that line, I mean, that clearly says to me, we were affirming the relief granted. We were affirming the injunction while recognizing that it had significant impacts and that municipalities had a right to a hearing before their permits were amended. So why isn't this opinion, you know, saying the injunction is fine, those things are not to be relitigated? The purpose of the contested hearing was to allow each municipality to plead its case that compliance would be too hard, impractical, infeasible, and for that reason, individual permits should not be amended.
I believe the answer to that is actually simple and straightforward.
Okay.
This court did affirm remanded and said, depending on the evidence, the district court judge could amend her injunction.
I know, but the district court judge didn't amend her injunction. The administrative law judge reversed a portion of the injunction, the watering ban.
I believe that's incorrect. The ALJ just made findings on the permit. District court, nobody is disputing here that the district court still doesn't have jurisdiction over this matter. We've been back in front of her.
Let me ask you this then. Is it your position that as it stands, the portion of the injunction concerning the water ban is still in effect?
Subject to the contested case hearing results and the ability of the judge to the district court judge, to potentially modify that injunction. And as I said, I hate to repeat it, but if we hadn't been on appeal here, we probably would be back in front of the judge doing that.
So your view of the administrative law judge's decision is that it's not dispositive on any of these portions of the injunction. Rather, it's just an advisory opinion for the district court to consider. And the only entity that can change the injunction is the district court.
The ALJ clearly cannot change the injunction, but I think it's more than advisory. There is a reason this court ordered the contested case hearing, and it's not illusory.
I just want to be clear. You're saying the only entity that can modify the 2017 injunction is the district court that entered it, regardless of what the administrative law judge has ruled regarding whether or not any component satisfies the standard necessary to issue the injunction.
Your Honor, I would say this. Clearly, the ALJ cannot change the injunction. Okay. The district court judge could, or this panel could. You have the ability also to modify the injunction if you believe it was inappropriate based on the new evidence, new contested case hearing results, and I suggest, at least on behalf of the two cities I'm representing on that issue, this court obviously has that authority to.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions from the panel? All right.
Your Honors, Jay Squires, Squires, Welsberger, and Mace, appearing on behalf of the City of Lino Lakes. My client happened to be a non-party to any of the prior proceedings. Never had any right to have a say into the matter until we were involved in the injunction and our right to a contested case hearing was recognized. I'm going to address the surface water condition. Specifically, I drew the short straw. I've got 3 minutes. Here, ALJ Lippman concluded at paragraph 136 of his order that the imposition of the condition requiring the study of conversion of city water systems to utilization of surface water was reasonably necessary to protect the public safety and welfare. The City of Lino Lakes, I think, is the only one that challenges that conclusion as arbitrary and capricious as applied to Lino Lakes specifically. Again, we've already talked about the portions of the order saying there may be different circumstances for different cities in the contested case. There are 3 reasons the decision was arbitrary and capricious. First one, Lino Lakes hearing exhibit number 30. Second one, Lino Lakes hearing exhibit number 7. And lastly, Laws 23, Chapter 60, Article 1, Section 5F. I'd like to address each of those reasons. Reason number one, it's neither reasonable nor necessary to require a significant investment of public money and staff and consultant resources to study something that has already been studied. Lino Lakes Exhibit Number 30 is a 2014 Met Council study titled Feasibility Assessment of Approaches to Water Sustainability in the Northeast Metro Area. That report was not contested by any of the parties. The record has a paucity of any evidence objecting to or on the other side from the associations relative to that study. That study specifically studied surface water conversion efficacy in the region, looked at different options, different iterations, and attached cost estimates to all of those. Reason number two, it's not reasonable and necessary to mandate the study of something that is, as we speak, being further studied by a legislatively formed group that will issue a report in 2 years. Under the law I cited, the legislature appropriated $2 million to impanel a group of experts to create a comprehensive plan that provides for, quote, converting water supplies that are groundwater dependent to total or partial supplies from surface water sources. This legislatively created panel is studying that specific issue that is the subject of this study. The third reason, and perhaps the most important, and this is where the issue about differing cities have different circumstances, Lino Lakes already did study the efficacy of surface water conversions for its water utility and concluded that surface water conversion was not feasible in the community due largely to water quality issues. Lino Lakes Exhibit Number 7, Bolton and Mink Engineering Report, just a few years before the hearing. This is a circumstance where Lino Lakes is different than everybody else in the sense that a direction to study something that they just studied is arbitrary. So in summary, it's not reasonable, it's not necessary to compel a study and require the significant expenditure of public funds, staff resources, to study surface water conversion options that were studied on a regional level in 2014, specifically in the corporate boundaries of Lino Lakes in 2019, and is being comprehensively studied by a legislative work group that will then produce a report on the very issue that is the subject of this condition. So Lino Lakes requests the remedy that that permit condition be vacated as to it.
Just one quick question.
Yes.
Would you, are you seeking then a remand for the ALJ to make findings specific to Lino Lakes?
No,
or
I think.
Or are you asking us to reverse as to Lino Lakes?
The latter, Your Honor, on administrative appeals such as this, the court has the authority not necessarily to remand, but to simply find it's arbitrary and capricious and vacate that condition. That's the request we have.
But then we're vacating the district court's, a portion of the district court's injunction, yes?
I believe that the district court injunction, the district court action, and I don't want to go over my time in answering the question too lengthy. I think it's been addressed by others. But the district court action was a mere action that set aside these issues. My client never had, as I mentioned, its day in court. So I think the district court injunction is at a more global level, litigated general negative impacts on the lake, applied MIRA standards, but then...
And granted significant equitable relief in the form
correct.
Of the injunction,
and
which
lumped
we upheld.
Yes, Your Honor. Lumped my client into the proceedings, and we finally had our day in court to be able to demonstrate to an ALJ and this court on review of that decision that these particular conditions are not reasonably necessary.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Oliver Larson. I'm with the Attorney General's Office. My client is the Department of Natural Resources. I want to start just because recency and talking about this issue about surface water conversion in Lino Lakes. And just two small points here. If Lino Lakes is correct, right, that all this study has already either been done or is being done now, then the burden on them to participate in the process and deliver that same work product back to DNR is essentially nothing. And we were frankly surprised because when we saw this provision, the way that the DNR views it is that, yes, there was a study done in 2014, and the legislature has appropriated $2 million for further study of this. What the condition says is all of these communities within the 5 miles of White Bear Lake should participate in the process by which that work product is going to be delivered to the DNR for decision making. So why is there an objection? Look, I'm not going to castigate anybody, but I think what's really going on here is that at the end of the day, if there's going to be surface water conversion, it's going to be done on a regional basis, and people are going to have to pony up, right? Whether it's the legislature through bonding, whether it's these communities, it's not going to be fair to ask a select group of communities to say, okay, you're going to pay the full freight for the surface water conversion. It's going to have to be done on a regional basis, and I have no doubt that what Lionel Lakes would like is to be on the outside of that fence, right? They don't want to kick in for the cost they're going to be in that program. And so that's what this is really about. And so I think you should just get back to the root issue. Is there something unfair about asking Lionel Lakes to participate in a study for which $2 million has already been appropriated to deliver work product to the DNR about how surface water conversion might actually be accomplished? And also note that all the condition requires is they participate in the process. Both the district court and the ALJ have been clear that there's no mandate that they actually build any of this out, right? The injunction is study this, deliver the work product. The decisions about whether we're going to actually fund this and build it are going to be left through to the normal political processes. So,
Mr. Larson, I just had a few follow-up questions, and thank you for that, you know, from the municipalities for you. You know, there was talk about, well, were the ALJ's factual findings, they were just that, factual findings, it all goes back to the district court. It's, you know, question, was this an advisory opinion? I mean, what is your take on all of that and the DNR's take?
My take on it is that what this court held in the second opinion is that these permit conditions would be remanded, that these communities would get an opportunity to contest them, basically around the issues of feasibility. Basically say, I can't accomplish the thing that I've been ordered to do, and if an ALJ determined, in fact, they cannot accomplish the thing that they have been ordered to do, then some relief would need to be afforded. Now, my view is that the ALJ would have the ability to say, that condition is struck for that community because they have demonstrated to my satisfaction that they can't do it.
So, Mr. Larson, if you say, well, it really was back to the ALJ around issues and feasibility, then why did the DNR frame up this issue in terms of, you know, necessary for the safety and welfare of the people of Minnesota? I mean, which, you know, one reading of our opinion would say that was already decided by the district court.
The permit conditions went out before the appeals were decided. So the district court issued this decision. The DNR issued the permit amendments while the first appeal was still pending. And so I think what the DNR did is it looked at the statutory language that it puts into essentially all these permit conditions and said, look, here are your permit conditions. You know, here's the language that we include about health, safety, and welfare. Most of these permits we find it's met. But there wasn't a visibility into how this would land with this court or the Supreme Court.
So it would be your position then that based on, and is it your position then, the DNR is bound by the injunction stands from 2017, but based on the outcome of the contested case hearing, an individual municipality could receive relief from one or more of the injunction conditions based on what happened at the contested hearing.
Let me offer two responses. One, just I don't know that I agree that the injunction is necessarily the issue. The affirmative relief was directed to DNR to insert these permit conditions, okay? And so what I would say is that I think all of the communities have the right under that statutory process to contest on a limited basis whether those permit conditions should stand. And so I don't think it really requires a modification of the court's injunction. I don't see it as a collateral attack on the injunction. And I think in the second Court of Appeals opinion, this court recognized that there may be inconsistencies that result from these contested case procedures. Let me also identify for you, this may be helpful, like what was, when the DNR, for example, briefed the 7590 issue to this court on this issue, it was in a very different context. The community that we were actually looking at was Columbus, who ended up being outside the five-mile area. But we use it as an example because there was thought that they might come within the injunction order. So Columbus is a very unique community in that the Running Aces track is inside of their jurisdiction. And so something like 50% of their water use went to that one thing. And so it would have been impossible for them to meet the 90 condition because they had this one giant industrial user that was half of their system. And so that was what we pointed out to the court in the second round in front of this court. We said, look, there may be communities like Columbus who have a particular user or a particular set of users, which means that the 7590 condition is simply not feasible, and they're going to be entitled to some kind of relief.
So we have a district court injunction or order to modify permits, which grants broad global equitable relief under MARA, but then a mechanism in place by which individual municipalities could obtain relief from those conditions based on their specific circumstances.
That's how we view the order.
Then should we be concerned that in rejecting the irrigation ban, the administrative law judge didn't appear, you know, to do it municipality by municipality and saying, well, you can comply, you can't comply, here's why, and instead gave us this sort of broad, this isn't necessary, which seems to be kind of the high-level attack on the condition.
We didn't brief the irrigation ban, and I don't want to be unfair to parties by inserting essentially new arguments that you know parties didn't have the right to see. And I think there's been good briefing on both sides. I agree. There's a struggle there. I'm not sure that the arguments that have been made on the irrigation bans are the ones that this court contemplated. And like I said, down below, we support the irrigation ban. Candidly, I think it's a close call. There is new information available. It is a difficult issue. And I think, you know, you're going to have to grapple with the briefing that you have in front of you. But there is some disconnect there between, I think, what it was remanded for and what the contested case ended up being on that issue.
So let's set aside for the moment on the irrigation ban and go to the other two conditions, particularly the 75-90, I think it is, per capita. The ALJ, you talked about, well, it was kind of a more limited remand or on issues of feasibility, but the ALJ didn't address them on a municipality and municipality and didn't even get to Vandas Heights. I mean, just given what you said about the approach, shouldn't we be considering remanding to the ALJ? Or is it a matter? I take it from your brief that you don't think this is the case, that we ought to just reverse that.
You know, I will also, as much as possible, obviously, to say you've got discretion, I would discourage remands only because we're 12 years into this litigation, and I will be candid in saying that I think the continuation of this litigation is preventing some of the actual on-the-ground, you know, planning that actually needs to go on, like how are we going to fix this problem because we're still deciding who's going to have to fix it. That said, I don't think any, and this is what we, and I'll stand on this, I don't think any of the communities came in the contested case and made a viable argument that they can't hit 75-90. And that's why you don't see any kind of detailed discussion in the in ALJ Littman's order about that.
So is it your perspective then that if we remanded on that issue for more, we could do so, you know, not opening the record, just look at what's already there and ask for more specific findings?
That would be appropriate.
Or you tell me what else. I'm trying to get to everyone. You know,
but let me just take Vadnais Heights, for example, right? They came in, and they do have a heavier commercial base than the other communities that are in this area. But we put their city manager on the stand, and we asked them questions like, have you gone and spoken to a single commercial user of water and asked them what they can do to reduce their water use? And the answer was no. They hadn't done anything. And so that was the record that was in front of ALJ Littman as they were coming in. They're saying, well, we have, you know, a more commercial-heavy user base. And the response is, well, what have you done to address that? And remember, too, the condition is that they submit a plan to phase down to 75-90, and they haven't even... They basically hadn't even started on the process of figuring out how to reduce water use. And so there really is just a total failure of evidence that any of these communities can't hit the 75-90 condition. And as we indicate in the briefing, like there's 50 available years of study in the last 5 years up to the briefing, and 45 of the 50 years for these communities, they hit 75-90. I think the argument that they can't do it is just not viable. I see I'm out of time.
Are there additional questions? Thank you. Now, we have an additional split at this point, right, between the two associations? Or is one lawyer?
Just one.
Okay, so you're arguing for both. Thank you. Right. And you'll do 20 minutes then?
Or
15. 15-5.
May it please the court and counsel, I'm Byron Starnes, S-T-A-R-N-S, attorney for the intervener in the trial court matter and now relator, White Bear Lake Homeowners Association, and I'm arguing for both the Homeowners Association and the Rehabilitation Association. And I think that I'd like to focus on what I think is the heart of the case with respect to Permit Condition 2, and that is the scope, the proper scope of the contested case under this court's decision, which I think spent a lot of time on. And Our position is that there is no ability in the contested case to undo the mirror remedy. The mirror remedy is affirmed. It's there. So the only issue that the contested case can deal with is application of the mirror remedy to a specific municipality. And the specific municipalities are given the opportunity to make a record, and their record should be based upon how this application of the condition might be changed to meet their unique circumstances.
So, where do you, assuming that, you know, law of the case doesn't apply, how does that, what you just described to us, match on to the contested case hearing process? So why is it that the municipalities can't relitigate on their, you know, whether or not this is necessary for the safety and welfare?
Because our position is that the MIRA judgment establishes that it's reasonably necessary for the general condition is reasonably necessary for the safety and welfare of the public.
So that the injunction kind of answers that question. It's not the same language, though. It's not the same statute. So why, you know, I don't know if we have any other cases or something to help us understand what the reasonably necessary for the safety and welfare is, or what constitutes reasonably necessary. But why is it that an injunction that's been affirmed on appeal would satisfy that?
Because I think it's binding. It's a determination that these conditions are required by MIRA in order to protect White Bear Lake and the groundwater in the Northeast Metro, and that serves the public interest. So that applying that condition is reasonable and necessary. It's the department is ordered to do it, but it's also reasonable and necessary as a matter of law that's been affirmed by the appellate courts. So that's our position. It doesn't have to match up exactly in the language. The other thing, I think the reasonable and necessary provision in 103G, I think it's 315, is really dealing with, as DNR pointed out in his brief, an unusual type of administrative proceeding, which the commissioner doesn't have to issue permits. He can issue them without a hearing. So it's a very, very unusual statute. So I think it doesn't really fit in terms of the kind of standard contested case. And so I think what we're left with is the issue of what has this court done with respect to defining the scope of the contested case hearings that we're here on appeal from. And I think it's been clear, as the court's questions have pointed out, that it's basically about the application of these permit conditions to particular municipalities. That's the scope of the contested case hearing. And the ALJ himself, in his 12th pre-hearing order, got that right. He said that the only thing that we can consider in the contested case hearing is if a municipality can come forward and prove it doesn't use water from the aquifer, or two, that there's some feasibility or unique issue related to the municipality that leads to a modification of the injunction as applied to their permit.
So I agree that that's what the order from the 12th hearing, or the summary disposition order, but the ALJ seemed to do something different than that.
That's the problem. He was on the right course, and then when he got to the hearing, he went a different direction. He went outside the scope. So our position legally is there are two legal errors the ALJ made with respect to his order reversing permit condition two. First, he didn't use the proper scope of the hearing as required by this court. And second, he created an improper legal standard, even-handedness and under-inclusiveness, as a substantive basis for his decision, and that was error.
So why just, if, you know, setting aside the condition two, or maybe if we agree with you on condition two that he didn't, that was kind of a blanket decision or a global decision with respect to all, why isn't that, did he make the same error with respect to condition one and three? where there it was also a global determination as opposed to whether individual municipalities had established or produced evidence that it was infeasible for them. And there were no real findings on that side of the question from
and
the
ALJ. I think that that may be true, but it's really harmful. It doesn't make the one legal error on condition two not still a legal error. And it basically, if he applied that general look at the tried to undo what the injunction provided, he didn't do it. So in that sense, he didn't cross the line like he crossed it on condition two. So it is there is an inconsistency there, and for some reason he went off base on condition two is our position.
Judge Jessen?
So Mr. Starnes, if we agreed with you on condition two that it was not the ALJ was not using the appropriate scope, don't we then have to remand to the ALJ to look and direct him about the appropriate scope and also give the municipalities an opportunity to raise any feasibility or unique issues at that point?
Your Honor, I don't think so. In fact, I think the municipalities had the opportunity. They knew what the scope was. He said it in his pretrial order, and they put on what the evidence they put on. And I think that I would say that the record supports the reasonableness of these other conditions. Yeah, so I don't think there's any need for a remand back to the ALJ for more evidence. They've had their opportunity to put in the evidence. The fact that they chose the wrong pathway and put in generic evidence trying to undo the injunction as opposed to municipal specific evidence as to why the injunction shouldn't be applied is their choice. And I think they'll have very great difficulty creating evidence of specific municipal problems with respect to conditions one and three for the reasons you've heard. I mean, those are planning conditions. And the only sort of municipal specific issues with respect to the per capita water use that could have come up would be leaky pipes. That's what this court recognized in its decision, in Judge Siegel's decision, and that is that, and I think the point is that if a community had come in with a leaky pipe affirmative defense, the remedy would not be to abolish the permit requirement to meet the per capita. It would be to give them more time to get the pipes repaired. Before and so that's the nature of the modification that I think is contemplated by this court's recognition in its December decision that based upon evidence that comes out in the contested case hearings, the district court judge can modify her injunction to meet those specific situations. And we've actually implemented that in this case already. In the context of, you recall there were 17 contested cases filed, only seven went to contested case. 10 of them were resolved. And how were they resolved? They were resolved by settlements which were presented to the district court for approval as being an appropriate modification of its order. So I think that the court in its decision designed a workable system that really makes sense. Because I think the correct decision on the big picture MIRA case. This is, the evidence has only gotten stronger since the trial in 17. This is a very severe situation. We're using groundwater in the Northeast Metro at a rate that's 40% higher than it should be if we really met the cumulative annual withdrawal amount for the region, and so there is a need to do something, and so all of these permit conditions should be sustained. They're valuable tools to stop and reduce the non-essential use of water.
Mr. Starnes, would you agree that if, as far as what has been described as new evidence, new science that came about, that it would be appropriate to go take that to the district court and ask for, and ask for a change in the terms of the injunction. I assume that you would agree with that.
Yes, I would. I mean, I think we, you know, the associations could do that. You know, the DNR could do that. And any municipality could try and intervene in the case and do it. And so I think that, you know, to your question, your question to council about, well, what should we do? You know, I think we suggest in our brief that one result would be there's only one circumstance, I think, that satisfied, you know, the feasibility situation, and that could be that evidence could be remanded to DNR to make a recommendation, if any, for what the district court ought to do in light of that. And that was the enforcement issue, the extraterritorial enforcement issue for the sprinkler ban. And so it seems to me that's an example of at least three or four of the seven have this issue. And I think there are answers to that that don't involve changing the condition, but there might be answers that involve how you would deal with the extraterritorial users. And it's so that would be an example of how the system that this court has already set up actually works well. Thank you.
And so the system you're describing is the district court granted global MARA relief and directed DNR to amend its permits to incorporate that relief. This court affirmed the grant of MARA relief, but said you've got to give these municipalities a hearing before you amend their permits to incorporate that MARA relief. And at that hearing, the municipalities could present their particular circumstances in opposition to amendment consistent with the MARA relief. And so the MARA relief stands, but people had a way to have it, to modify. Avoid it in part or fully as a result of these contested case hearings.
Right. And I think the leaky pipes are a good kind of practical example. And that is, if the community has leaky pipes and there's a deadline to meet a per capita limitation, it might be able to get that extended as a modification of the court's order. Thank you.
All right, so I think that brings us to rebuttal arguments. Mr. Mills.
Okay. This court's 2020 opinion concluded the section about the statutory right to a contested case hearing by warning that the district court must heed the right of the permit holders to a contested case hearing as it administrates its injunction, and depending on the evidence adduced in the contested case hearing, modifications may be appropriate. That's at star 11 in the Westlaw version. And I think disregarding the findings and conclusions of a judge who sat through a rather long contested case hearing, disregarding the results on the irrigation ban would be the opposite of heeding it. And so the evidence that the ALJ considered was not just merely global evidence about you know, all cities. What happened was the ALJ consolidated the contested case hearings for all the permit holders. And so the cities were providing individualized evidence at the hearing. And the point on the irrigation ban is, how can the cities expect residents to not irrigate their lawns for years under this ban, while the ban has no appreciable effect on the lake level? And the ALJ, hearing all the evidence from the cities, concluded under 103G, 0.315, that such an irrigation ban is not reasonable and necessary for the safety and welfare.
Is that inconsistent with the district court's findings?
No, because the district court didn't consider the reasonable necessity under the statute. That was what I think this court's 2020 opinion pointed to in affording the cities the right to a contested case hearing on this issue.
I think what I heard you just say is the district court didn't apply the appropriate standard in determining or in issuing mirror relief. Where in do we say that?
Yeah, I don't have any quarrel with the district court's opinion on MIRA. Not at all. My point here, Judge Larkin, is that the district court was not analyzing 103G.315. It didn't discuss the reasonably necessary standard under that statute, and that is the only statute that authorizes a new permit condition to be imposed on the city's permit.
And was that statute in effect at the time the district court made its decision?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so then what you're saying is the district court erred and the district court's decision should be reversed.
Well, I think what in 2020, that's exactly what this court recognized, is that it said it was an error of the district court to order permit amendments without allowing the statutory right of a contested case.
Things, because
I apologize, I may.
I thought I heard you argue that the district court did not apply the proper statutory standard when issuing MIRA relief. In other words, consider whether it was necessary for the safety and the welfare of the public.
Either I misspoke or I was misunderstood. I apologize either way. My point here is that the district court did not discuss 103G.315. You can search the district court's 27 opinion.
What does that statute say?
So that's the statute that authorizes permit conditions to be imposed if they are reasonably necessary for the safety and welfare of the state. District court never cited that statute. It's just not in the opinion. There's no analysis or discussion. And this court in 2020 said, hold on here. You can't impose amendments to permit conditions unless you give the right of a contested case.
And I think I'm understanding your argument. I want to make sure I do. What you're saying is you can't amend a permit unless you find it's necessary for the safety and the welfare. And the district court didn't consider that standard.
Yes.
Therefore, the district court should not have ordered any of these amendments or the conditions that would be the basis for the amendments.
I think that's fair, Your Honor. And this is, I'm reading on page, it's star 11 of the Westlaw version. The court said this is in conflict with the statutory right of permit holders to a contested case hearing before their permits can be amended. So that's why we had this process.
What your argument boils down to then, I think, is saying the district court should have been reversed because the district court didn't, because none of these permit holders were allowed to have a contested case hearing. Therefore, the district court should not have ordered this injunction, should not have ordered these permit amendments.
I'm not really saying the this court's 2020 opinion should be written differently. I'm not talking about
this court's 2020 opinion. What I'm just trying to get at is you seem to be saying the district court should have been reversed because the district court ordered the DNR to amend permits even though the permit holders had not had a hearing and would not have a hearing, and that would violate statute. Is that where the district court erred?
I want to be careful that I'm reading this court's 2020 opinion properly.
Because I can tell you, this court's 2020 opinion says the district court erred because the municipalities have a right to a hearing.
Yes.
What this court did not say was, we therefore reverse the district court, start over with contested case hearings. We affirmed the district court and said that the way to honor the right to a contested case hearing is to have a contested case hearing on the issue of administration of the injunction. That is, we affirmed the district court's requirements of irrigation ban, 90 to 75, surface water conversion, but we said individual municipalities are entitled to have a contested case hearing to see whether their individual permits should be amended to require those things or not, recognizing that there could be circumstances that that relief should not be imposed on an individual municipality. Isn't that simply what we did? Because what you seem to be saying is, well, to the extent that you know, the district court can't order any amendments unless there is a contested hearing. Therefore, when we went for our contested hearing, we got to litigate everything, including whether or not there should be this mara relief that was awarded.
No? That's not what I'm trying to say here. I think the key point is that this court required the district court to modify its injunction to honor the right of the permit holders to obtain a contested case hearing. So the court was saying you can't just amend permits without the contested case hearing. And
that
nothing
should,
in that opinion, sorry, Your Honor.
And that there should be a contested case hearing, and if it was shown that it was infeasible to comply with the relief the district court had ordered and that we affirmed, modification should be made.
So this court's opinion, this notion of feasibility isn't in 103G.315.
I understand that, and but we're not
Sorry.
That goes down an argument that we erred, we shouldn't have said feasibility, and we're not going to review our own opinion. We're just trying to figure out exactly what was supposed to happen at this contested hearing. And I think I understand your argument. Your argument seems to be that the municipalities were entitled to a contested case hearing before their permits were amended. Therefore, the district court should not have ordered amendment of their permits without first holding a contested case hearing, which seems to logically lead to a conclusion that we should have reversed because the district court shouldn't have ordered amendment because there had not been a hearing for any of the municipalities.
Can I ask it in a slightly different way, just looking at the words of our opinion, because I'm trying to figure out if your argument stems from an interpretation of what we said was supposed to happen in our 2020 opinion or what's required under the statute, and if there's conflict there. And, you know, we say that is not to say permit holders, which would include all of the municipalities, right?
Correct.
Despite not all of them being a party to that action. That is not to say that they have the right to relitigate whether groundwater appropriations within 5-mile radius will or have a negative impact. If you were right that a contested case hearing is kind of a fresh look, wouldn't they be able to relitigate that? So why are they bound, or why have the municipalities found themselves to be bound by not able to relitigate? Because I know we said it expressly, so maybe there's something there that you don't want to. But if you're, I'm just trying to follow your line of interpreting how the statutes work together. Wouldn't you say that the contested case hearings would have been open to even that challenge had they brought it?
Well, we certainly didn't try to do that, Your Honor.
But why is that different from the affirming the injunction? Because here we said, you know, you can't relitigate negative case hearings. You can't relitigate the idea that these injunctions have been affirmed. You're just looking at the scope of the impact.
Yeah. I think the statute provides the legal standard, and so you look at whether the permit conditions are reasonably necessary.
And let's say there's been new evidence that in fact there was no negative impact, and that some of the municipalities have no impact that has come up since then. Wouldn't you then come to us and say, well, we could present that at the contested case hearing, despite the fact that our opinion said you weren't supposed to?
We were definitely careful not to do that, respecting that. But hypothetically, I think your hypothetical is fair, that if there was evidence.
That it could have been brought up again.
Your argument is purely statutory
interpretation.
Correct.
What does a contested case hearing mean, not an interpretation of what we said in so that the contested case hearing was effectively a fresh look, which, because I don't think that you can get that from our opinion, which limited, you can't relitigate the negative impact issue. The injunctions are affirmed. The language says we express our concern that the scope of the impact, which makes it to me sound like, again, it's about individual, like whether they're impacted by these injunctions that are going to be placed on them if they don't. So I don't think that I could read from our that how we were interpreting the contested case hearing is consistent with your position in this case. And so I think if you were to prevail, it would be on a statutory interpretation issue of this is what a contested case hearing is. Maybe it's not what we intended or thought it was in 2020, but this is what it is, and you have to apply that here.
That's a fair summary, Your Honor. This court did point to the statute, 103G.315, and the DNR's notice in order for hearing articulated the standard, you know, whether the irrigation ban was reasonably necessary under that 103G.315. And so this court really doesn't have the authority to change a statute. And so we went to the hearing following the statute.
Could I ask this? Under MIRA, the district court is the entity who's entrusted to grant relief under MIRA, yes?
That's correct.
Okay. Does MIRA say anything about an administrative law judge granting relief under MIRA? Or is it the district court who's supposed to grant relief under MIRA?
I believe a district court can do that. I haven't read it recently. I don't think ALJ has jurisdiction.
It's
on
a very
MIRA
unusual
claim.
Situation because, like, MIRA says the district court decides what relief is appropriate under MIRA. The district court here said, here's the relief that's appropriate under MIRA. We affirm the district court. But there is another statute that says you get a right to a contested hearing before your water permit is amended. So I don't know that you could take that contested hearing and say, well, this is just another avenue for determining whether or not MIRA relief should be available. To reconcile those two statutes, one way seems to be what might be read from our opinion, is like the district court has decided what the MIRA relief is. We've affirmed it, but yes, you do still have your right to a contested hearing. It's not about whether or not the MIRA relief was appropriate, valid, in error. It's about the extent to which you should be bound by the MIRA relief. Isn't that a way to reconcile the two statutes?
I certainly understand the tension, okay, Judge Larkin, that you're identifying between these two statutes. I would just say that this court's opinion did say that heed must be taken of
Understood.
The permit holder's statutory
and
right.
And people had their contested hearing. The issue is, what was the purpose? And I thank you for your time. Are there any questions? No, I know we have one more rebuttal argument, but any questions of Mr. Mills? All right, then.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Final rebuttal. Thank you, sir.
I have nothing further to add unless the court has questions.
No. Then we thank you all for your briefing, very thorough, and your arguments. Acknowledge kind of uncharted territory, a little bit tricky in terms of how these statutory components work together, but we will do our best to find the right answer, and we will do it within 90 days. Thank you.
Please, right. Nice job, Bob.